We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Red Laying Ground Table. And for this edition, I'm really thrilled to bring on someone who I learned about during the pandemic, and he's going to learn from me here in a moment just how late I was to get on into the party of the Pop Fly Pop Shop. Daniel Jacob Horein, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with me. I appreciate it.
Hi, Seth. Thanks for having me.
Well, hey, you. Your bio describes you as a young artist when you were growing up. It even describes bouts of homelessness growing up and things like that. I'd like you to tell me a little bit about where your artistic flair came from and how did you latch on to two things, baseball and comic books?
Well, the artistic bent has always been there. I think I was a big believer in nurture over nature, but really. Growing up in a family of firefighters, cops, and construction workers, I came into the family as a foster kid, and then eventually it was adopted. But I brought that artistic bent with me, and so while there were not a lot of creatives in the family that still came with me, and I don't remember a time not creating just ever since I was a kid. Or even a baby. I just would be drawn to creating. And in terms of baseball and comics, for me, there's a golden age right around 10 years old. It's kind of this, you're a big boy at that time. But still a little kid, and it's sort of this magic sweet spot. And when I was 10, that was the two spheres of my world. The Venn diagram was just baseball and comic books.
Sure.
My father took me to Dodger games growing up. Those are my first games, my first baseball memories, and just in that golden age of around 10-ish. And then when my father passed in 2020, you know, there's a lot of self-reflection that goes on, as being a father myself of a young boy, I kind of think I go back and think about my childhood and how I was raised and all that self-reflection that baseball and comics kind of rose to the surface again as things I loved when I was young, and kind of Pop Fly was born from those moments of just kind of dealing with that grief and reflection.
Okay, for those that don't know. That follow our podcast. This is the type of the thing we're talking about. We're going to go into all of it. So mm-hmm. Daniel has created they are covers. They're not comic books. Right. You make sure to let people know that.
Yeah.
That here. You make sure to let people know that it's artwork. Mm-hmm. But it connects a comic book look and feel with all, it's all former baseball players, correct? To this point, as far as players you've used.
There's been a couple, like literally a couple. I think Mike Trout and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Okay,
you did do Trout. You're right.
Yeah, but the vast majority are retired folks.
Okay, so those prints and they come out and since that 2020, we'll set the parameters with how it works, right? For the most part, you've deviated a little bit back and forth, but for the most part, when you're in a season, so to speak, you produce one a week, and you have basically 7 days as a consumer to order that print. And then once those 7 days are over, and again, you deviate from that for a little bit, but once those 7 days are over, it's gone. You can't order it again. That presents some challenges to those of us who were 2 weeks late to the Eric Davis print. But we'll talk about that a little bit in a moment, but does that dip into more of like the artist's world, I guess, on kind of the way you've chosen to do that? And I guess it makes it more, maybe hard to come by, right? If the number is limited to a week's worth, how did you decide how to do that?
You know, it's funny. I'll give an explanation, then I'll just give you the scenario. We'll start with the scenario. I was in this room right here during the pandemic, and I had done a piece of art, Will Clark, and it was just probably and within 5 minutes, I thought, oh, I'll put it out there for a week and see what happens, and I'll call it Popfly, and I'll make it available for a week. That's it, and that became the whole model for the last 4 years, but. But I think a little bit of the thought behind it, I think, is partly experimental. I think partly seeing what Topps was doing with their most recent projects, their artist projects, and their Topps Now thing. It was the first time I think I had seen an art project that was on a time limit. I think there's this. I had done a lot of pieces in the past. Not too many baseball related, but some pieces in the past where I would kind of casually put it up and say, here it is, world. Let me know if you'd like it. There's crickets, you know? So let me try something different. Let me put it up for a week and then let that be it. And I think there was a little bit of like, But what if people like it? What if, you know, I want to keep it out there for a long time. And my thought was to get over the preciousness of it and realize and think, you know, your best work is still in the tank, Daniel Jacob. You know, you've got more stuff. You'll create more stuff. So it was just sort of experimental and also to be honest too, it's a personal challenge too. I think if you give yourself a year to do an art piece, you'll take the year. If you give yourself 6 months to do the art piece, you'll take the 6 months. And then so if you give yourself a week, you know, magically it takes a week as well. So there's a lot of ingredients in there, but that's just kind of what was come up with on a whim almost 4 years ago. And it's been pretty much almost the same ever since.
Well, and you mentioned Will Clark being your first one. Right. It sold 11 copies. You released that on June 12th, 2020. And certainly you've mentioned, I guess COVID and the time that we were spending, it seems like despite all the negative that came out of that time for some people, including yourself, I think, some positive came out of it. And one of those positives is we all get to share in your artwork with Popfly. So June 12, 2020, you put it out there. Mm-hmm. The print run got 11 people bought it. 11 copies were sold. How did you list it that first week?
It was just on Instagram. All I had was Instagram with a little link, with a PayPal link. You know, it was, there was no intent to come out and say, this is my new business that I'm trying. It was just after work. I was like, it happened to be on a Friday and I had finished it on that Friday. And I think at that time it was 3:30. And so that became my launch time when I finished it on the day I finished it. So there was not a lot of intention, behind it, just kind of, oh, here it is ready and put it out there on Instagram.
Okay. So, people can go to popflypopshop.com, I believe is the web address.
Correct.
And they can see the retired prints and go back even to the beginning. I'm fortunate enough. I got the checklist that you sent out on a PDF form. That's a really cool cool thing to look at, and that's what I'm looking at now. So you went from there to Hammer and Hank, Hank Aaron, 13, mm-hmm. Prince, Nails, Lenny Dykstra had 15. And then the fourth one had Dale Murphy, Power mm-hmm. Alley, and it shows Dale Murphy almost looking like he's holding a lightsaber of mm-hmm. sorts. But that sold 162. What mm-hmm. happened there? I guess I know you've got an affinity for Dale Murphy and kind of a connection to him now. Mm-hmm. What happened to really boost the sales that week, do you think?
Well, we had actually made a connection prior to that. I had done some memorabilia for him in the year or two prior to that happening. And so we had become friends, and which was just full stop, super surreal to me, because I grew up a TBS kid, mm-hmm. Turner Broadcasting, a child all the way in LA, loving the Braves, loving Dale Murphy. So super, super cool to call him a friend. And then I had done the first three pieces, and I think I had Lenny Dykstra out at that time, Nails, and Dale wrote, he's like, we should do something together.
Yeah.
So when Dale Murphy says we should do something together, we do something together. And so he boosted it to his audience. He said, hey, I'm working with Daniel on this piece. And that was his audience that totally showed up. And that's why that number got a boost. And I will always, and I've told Dale this many times, I will really credit him for that boost being a huge part of a Pop Fly milestone, because once you work with one player, it mm-hmm. then makes it easier to work with another player. And then when you work with two players, then you say, oh, I've worked with this person, can we work together? So it just makes it easier and easier. And Dale Murphy was the first tip of the domino in working with athletes, and super grateful for him for that.
In a personal connection, my brother-in-law grew up a TBS kid down in Florida, mm-hmm. from Fort Lauderdale. And he loved Dale Murphy. Mm-hmm. And when you worked with Topps to produce some cards with them in the artist series, I picked up one of those for him for Christmas. And my wife was like, Mike's 50 years old. He's not going to want that. And I was like, oh, he's going to want this. So, yes, I think he's got it pretty prominently displayed in his home. All right. The print that got me into it, and this one hurts a little bit. You released Eric Davis. Mm-hmm. You released that on August 29th, 2020. Mm-hmm. And it's Eric the Red. It's beautiful. There's an actual photo of him looking back. It's surfaced on a few baseball cards and in some newspapers over the years. And just with those eyes, he's just mm-hmm. staring down what we perceive to possibly be a pitcher or something like that. Only 39 copies sold. Mm-hmm. And I became one of, I'm guessing, thousands of people who have reached out to you after the fact, not understanding the concept, saying, could I please just buy one, please? And you had to inform me that, nope, once a week's over, it's over.
It pains me. It pains me, but
yeah. That's the scenario. So we learned to deal with. I was trying to see today as I look it over, I might have learned about you at the point of the Ryan Express, which was only two prints mm-hmm. later, which makes it even worse for me, because if I could have done that. So I guess, you know, like I said, I remember learning about you. You were on MLB Network. I know C. Trent Rosecrans is a Reds writer for The Athletic. He was on to you very early. I know he's a huge George Brett guy, so I know he has that one. Mm-hmm. But I think he may have even had Eric the Red displayed when he would come on MLB Network. And I was like, hey, what is that? Because everybody was living in Zoom back then, right? Mm-hmm. So you notice everybody's backgrounds and all right, that. Right. And so that's when I kind of discovered you that way. And then I will tell you, and actually let's talk about this now. Every artist, I suppose, they either are commissioned to do something or they do some work and then they put it out there, right? Mm-hmm. And you get what whomever it is pays for it, correct? So that's it, right? Well, mm-hmm. then later on, and this happens with paintings and all sorts of things, people can decide if they want to sell it themselves, right? Right. And so that there is a whole community. I mean, you can go to eBay, you can see your prints there. There's a whole community on Facebook, which you and your wife kind of facilitate a little bit. And people go back and forth. Hey, I'm having a hard time right now. I need to sell a print or two. And they put mm-hmm. it on there. My experience with that was I did an In Search of Eric Davis, you know, pretty early on, And somebody came to me probably in 2021 and said, I'll sell it to you for $500. And I was like, my wife would kill me if I spent $500 on that. And so I didn't do it. And now, lo and behold, I mean, they're like, they're $2,500. What is the artist? What do you think about when you see that, when you see folks making more money than they put into it when they bought it from you?
I think it's great. I think it's great. I think people in the beginning were very nervous about doing that in front of me.
Yeah.
Like that I'm going to be sad, you know? No, I think it's absolutely great. And it's sort of, that was part of my vision for this, you know, that group is there. So to connect people to do exactly that. And I think, again, starting this project on a whim, I've begun to, as I now I'm 160 plus releases in, I began to see I feel it's an important project. I don't want to speak too highly of it, but I feel it's an important project. I've had, it's hanging in the Hall of Fame, and then that's a huge honor. And I'm blessed by that. And folks willing to.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Part with their hard-earned money, you know, on a piece of something that I created, that's very meaningful to me. You know, it's not like, did I get the money or did I not? No, not at all. It's by people, you know, taking immense value and pride and passion about your work as an artist. Like, that's what's really meaningful. And so, you know, I love seeing it come and go. You know, the higher it goes, the better. Like wow, that's super amazing to me, and I'm always flattered and honored by that. And there's not an ounce of like, oh man, to it. You know, it's awesome to see, and you know, I hope to keep going. I hope to keep bringing more folks in, and just becoming, you know, collectors of this, being my own best collector for 40 years of my own stuff, now having it in people's, you know, forever collections is just so wild, and not even a dot on the horizon just a few years ago. So yeah. all of it's amazing.
Well, and certainly as the, you know, raising all boats and all that kind of theory, as people will pay more for aftermarket issues or prints, they're likely to be more in tune to when you do release a new one. So
yeah,
so maybe you're getting more folks that way. Mm-hmm. If you remember, you know, you've done over 100, what do you say, 160 some of these?
Yeah, 166, I think we're on right now.
So if you have the memory to talk about it, can you tell me a little bit about Eric the Red, and then we'll talk about some of the other Reds related pieces as well.
Sure.
Do you recall working on Eric the Red? And you talk about Dale Murphy just a few years later. I was 8 years old when he had that amazing 1987 season, Eric Davis, that is. Mm-hmm. And in fact, if you go from, I believe, August 1st of 86 to July 31st of 87, the numbers are astronomical. They're otherworldly on stolen bases and home runs and the batting average and slugging, everything. He was just amazing. He was a meteor. Injuries obviously curbed his career, but at that moment in time, he's getting compared to Willie Mays. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was unbelievable. So tell me a little bit about putting that one together.
Definitely super early on, of course. What number was that? Was that like
number 11?
11. Yeah. So in the beginning, and it's still the same story now, I kind of think about what's inspiring to me, what's interesting to me, and then go from there. And Eric Davis, as a kid, to your point, in the 87 season, you know, Eric Davis was up there. He was for a time he was on the Mount Rushmore of 80s baseball, and there's of course the Dodgers connection. I grew up in Los Angeles as well. He was just one of those guys that was always kind of in my reflections. I look back to collecting baseball cards as a kid and just seeing this intimidating stare. He was as a kid ferocious, like he looked terrifying to me, and so I really wanted to capture that glare, those piercing eyes. Like, you know, it was really important to me. There was actually, I may or may not have posted in the group, but there was a first pass I had taken of that was Eric more piratey looking. Or Viking looking, I should say, with the Eric Red nickname, and I remember clearly. I had worked super late into the night on it, and I said, "This doesn't work. Like it doesn't capture the mood that I had wanted." While it was cool stylistically, with kind of torn jersey and ships in the background, it didn't quite tell the story or feel like Eric Davis felt to me as a kid. And so, you know, at the 11th hour, started over again with a piece that ended up on the print, and much more happier with how that one came out. Maybe we'll go back again with doing an Eric for the Red part two with Davis next time. And
you can put me in the first in line on that one if you do.
All right.
Let's do it. And you'd say he was intimidating because he was. The man had only a 26-inch waist. He was very what NFL people might call a twitchy athlete. I mean, he was incredible, but he had 26 home runs and 80 steals in 86. He had 37 homers and over 50 steals, I believe, in 87. He didn't hit a home run the whole month of September. He would have beaten Jose Canseco to 40-40 because he was at 37 before September 1st. Mm-hmm. And the next year, Jose Canseco hit 40-40 and certainly took – back in the 80s, that was a huge thing, right? 30-30 and 40-40, mm-hmm. showing you could do both. All right. So the next print that was Reds related that you released was
yes.
the machine. I'm getting a glare here or there. That's a little better. It's got the grade 8, which is the position players on it. Uh-huh. And it's got this machine. And I like the picture. Those are Dodgers players I'm sorry, Jacob. or Daniel. I'm a Reds fan. And then the 70s and 80s, the Dodgers were the hated rival. I like the picture that machine is knocking over Dodgers players along the way. Talk about that one. And certainly I've seen on the community, there's been folks who have gotten all 8 men in Joe Morgan before he passed to autograph that. So that is pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool. It's amazing. I think the Big Red Machine is a great example of how I like to look at this project or baseball art in general. And what I think and hope kind of makes me different. It's a challenge what baseball art can be. There's very little baseball on that piece. Mm-hmm. It's a big robot. And what I love doing, and I do this often with my conceptual pieces like that, I would consider definitely a conceptual piece, is learn as much as I can about a subject, kind of get immersed in it, and then delete all that and start over again with, what would I think the Big Red Machine be if I had no context as to what it was? Mm-hmm. And so yeah, I don't actually delete it, of course, but I start from zero again. Okay, Big Red Machine, it's an assembly of these 8 players. Okay, kind of like a Voltron type thing. where they come together to make one giant unit. And so that's sort of what I was kind of thinking through and piecing together is, you know, what would it be? What would it look like? And so I sort of looked at it in that lens, and told the story in that way. And it's one of my favorite ways to approach a baseball theme or story or athlete is in this more conceptual way. And, it's been a lot of fun. And I got to work with Johnny Bench, you know, about a year ago. And I think he had seen several enough of these come across his table at signings. He would say, he said, I had said to my son, how do I get on one of these? I want on one of these. So it was cool that it got on his radar and he was excited to be featured, you know, not just a little square on a piece, but be featured in one for the little general a few years later. But yeah, that was the Big Red Machine was such a fun piece. I created like a 3D model of it to kind of get my reference going. Okay. And it still sticks with me as a personal favorite. And when I speaking to Johnny Bench, when I did a Johnny Bench piece recently, you know, I incorporated elements of this Big Red Machine, like the head was on his little chest plate. And when I did Joe Morgan, just a few weeks ago, you know, there was a little icon of the robot head on the piece as well. So it's been really fun just to get to the point where the project can be a little self-referential,
sure.
Be an inside joke for or an Easter egg for the collectors who kind of know it.
Well, speaking of Easter eggs, you say still only 75 cents, of course, mm-hmm. referencing 1975, mm-hmm. and it's number 76, and it's mm-hmm. the month of October. So they won. I'm sorry, I'm going the wrong way. They won both months. You do things like that. You've got your logo and everything on that. And then I know we'll get to the other ones too. Like you mentioned, those same little Easter egg type things are on there as well. Okay. So that was number 34. It came out, March 21st, 2021, and it had a print run of 275.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you did Ted Klazuski, the mm-hmm. big clue print. And I kicked myself for this one. I recall the week it was out, and you see people comment too, I'm sure. Oh, I missed it. I can't believe I put it off too long. And I saw it on Tuesday and I waited and didn't get it. That was kind of that for me. Big Clue came out June 25th of 21, and it had a print run of 115. And it's got the sleeveless jersey, which with the muscles, and he was just known as being maybe the strongest man in baseball. The strong man look, like a maybe a circus type thing. I believe you put a cigarette in his mouth.
I did.
Which my mother or grandmother wouldn't have approved if I would have tried to hang that up when I was a kid. Of course, 54 cents was what you put up in the corner. Mm-hmm. Of course, he had a great year in 1954. What do you remember about that one? Because that's a guy you and I had. We didn't get to see him play.
I really enjoyed that one as well. It's pretty simple. And I let kind of Ted's physique do the talking there. One thing that I like to do, and I did it in that print, I like to, whenever possible, use complementary or opposite colors in my pieces with than the team colors. And Ted was a great example of that. The complementary color of red is green. And so if you see this piece in a collection in your man cave of red stuff, mm-hmm. you'll see like, what is this vibrant green thing sticking out there? And so it's meant to kind of draw your eye in a larger collection. And not every print does this, but it's something I do when I can. I do like to storytell with my pieces as well. I do remember some of the taglines being about, you know, being too big for the pages. And there's a rip in one of the top corners mm-hmm. to be like he's bust, like the story is busting out the cover. The cover can't even hold it, sort of making it, how did my old boss say, you feel it more than you see it. You kind of get that feeling of just, it's popping out of whatever container that it's in. So kind of an allusion to his big sleeveless muscly jersey there.
No doubt. Very soon after that, and it's Red's tangent here or extended the World Series waving at fair piece with Carlton Fisk. That one's funny because as a lot of Reds fans, and I wasn't alive in 1975, but certainly we have fond memories of even myself being a huge baseball guy, reading about the Big Red Machine and things like that. The joke always has been Johnny Bench tells it all the time. Well, everybody in the world, except for in Cincinnati, thinks that that won the World Series because that was game six and the Reds going on to win game seven. That's a beautiful print, though. And obviously the iconic waving it fair. But I like how they always tell a story about how it was actually like a rat or something ran over the cameraman. Like that's why he didn't shift. So it actually kept Carlton Fisk in the frame, and video production, they didn't always do that back then. Mm-hmm. So there's all these, you know, stories of whether they're true or not, I don't know, but we get to see him wave it fair. Well, you came from basically the backstop point of view for the artwork. And that's something, you know, certainly you don't see that side of it. But it's beautiful. It's like a lightning bolt coming off his bat, and he's just waving it. And boy, just beautiful. Certainly that's an iconic baseball moment.
Awesome. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And Johnny Bench also signed some of those as well now and then.
Sure. Absolutely. David Justice is a Cincinnati area native. You did one of him, but he was not a Red, of course. And then we get down to season five, and I've got it here. You did Pete Rose, Charlie Hustle, and certainly he's made for a comic book, I guess, right?
Yes.
This is Charlie Hustle here. And the joke amongst a lot of Reds fans is, because you started around that time, maybe a little bit before, you worked with some of the athletes and were able to say, hey, if you want to buy this with an autograph, that's an option. And folks could get Pete Rose to sign this like straight from you then to the consumer.
Right.
The joke among Reds fans is if you get something with Pete Rose on it that's not autographed, it's actually more rare. Because when he was breaking the hits record and all those things, he was basically wearing 10 jerseys a game and using every bat he could and then signing it and selling it. And of course everybody knows now he hangs out in Las Vegas to sell photographs. But Pete Rose, certainly, again, if you and I are the age we are, we didn't necessarily see him in his prime, but certainly we heard our parents talk about him, or our grandparents, right? I mean, it's just, he was iconic in the 70s, certainly.
100%.
What about that one? Obviously, the head first slide is what comes to people's mind, right? I mean, when you put that one together.
Yeah, I definitely will. It's based on, we've all seen that photograph of him hovering over the air, starting in the third, and I thought that was such a great starting point for a piece about a superhero, because he literally looks like he's flying through the air. You don't even need any context of like sliding in the third. It's just he's just head first diving into the action. And that piece, some pieces I have to work all week for. I'm fighting it, kind of like the Eric the Red one, the first one. It just wasn't what it needed to be. And I'm fighting the piece all week, and it's a struggle. And other pieces just fall out, fully formed. And I had done a couple sketches of Charlie Hustle to show to Pete, and some were interesting, but gravitated to that one right away. And it just sort of all came together without much struggle. It was just, it sort of just made itself, and really happy with how it came out. And even though we miss Pete in his prime, he's still the guy. It was just such an honor to do that piece. And not only was it Pete Rose, it was Pete Rose, and it came out really good. So I was happy on all fronts.
Well, your print run on that one was 808, which I believe at the time was the high.
I think so.
It's been surpassed since then. And I did deviate from my Reds buying. I bought the Michael Jordan baseball print. You do the Jumpman pose perfectly in a baseball uniform. That one had a print run of 992. So that one's Michael, you tapped into another market, another stratosphere when you decided to do Michael Jordan. That was really cool. And then you mentioned the Johnny Bench one, and he had the nickname the Little General, and you really leaned in on that one, didn't you? And how much you mentioned you collaborated with him. How much did Johnny kind of help dictate, maybe, or did he kind of give you, hey, the thumbs up when you came with an idea? How'd that one work?
It was more like a thumbs up to an idea. I think I wanted to use the little general nickname. You know, sometimes I'll use their actual names and sometimes I'll go on a nickname and just, but the little general really, really lent itself to it was available visually. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't a really conceptual thing that I had to like dig for. And so he was up for that. And I did several sketches of that and he was all over it. So some athletes I have to sort of bring along with me on the journey because mm-hmm. they're used to seeing themselves doing what they do, being, you know, throwing a pitch or batting at a ball. Like that's how they've seen themselves mm-hmm. a million times. So to see themselves in another light like this, like the little general and several other athletes, it was a kind of challenge to get them there to say, this might be a very new way to see yourself, but I think it's compelling. Mm-hmm. Johnny was on board right away. He loved it. You know, other athletes I've collaborated with, it's a journey to get there. But but yeah, Johnny was great, and we got to interview him and talk with him about a year ago, and when we were talking, he called me three name guy because Daniel Jacob Mora, yeah. And I was, oh my gosh, Johnny just gave me a nickname, and I was like, all right. maybe this will catch on, maybe my name is three name guy, and I can say that Johnny Benjamin gave me a nickname. Didn't catch on, but no. In that moment, I was like, I took a mental snapshot of, oh my gosh, Johnny Bench, just call me a name. I'll take mm-hmm. it.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Before I get to Joe Morgan, which is the latest of your Reds pieces, mm-hmm. you also started doing football.
Yeah.
And I picked up the Icky Woods, which this is right up my alley because mm-hmm. the year I decided to like NFL football, growing up I was in Southeastern Ohio, mm-hmm. I had a choice. A lot of my friends were Browns fans. Mm-hmm. But my grandfather was a Reds fan first, and then when the Bengals came along, he didn't really have an NFL team, so he decided to root for the Bengals. And he said, well, I'm a Bengals fan. He got me from the Hall of Fame a pennant you know, with mm-hmm. the Bengals on it in the spring of '88. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know who I like yet, Grandpa. Mm-hmm. And the Bengals go on to start the season 5-0, go on to the Super Bowl. Icky Woods was a rookie. The mm-hmm. Icky Shuffle was born. And when you did that one, I was like, here, take my money. I want the Icky Shuffle one. And certainly at the time you brought it out, it was around the time the Bengals kind of reestablished mm-hmm. themselves with Joe Burrow and company and things like that. So the football stuff is really cool too. People should wow. check that out as well. Now, so I wanted to kind of, I've already opened this. Mm-hmm. I bought Joe Morgan and you take what about maybe what is it about 3 to 5 weeks sometimes after an order, maybe even longer.
40 to 60 days is our window. Always shoot for earlier, but there's a lot of moving pieces. So
sure.
40 to 60 days, yeah.
Well, this one came with a pack of Donruss. That was cool. Awesome. A nice touch. You include a ticket, mm-hmm. a pop fly ticket. And you know when the package gets dropped off, I need to get outside and get that right away. It's mm-hmm. cool because you've got your pop fly logo on the inside, and it has a nice little piece of tape there. And you're very official. I mean, the idea of it being a comic book, right? It mm-hmm. comes in its own comic book
totally
type.
Nailed it. Yep. Sack.
And this one is Joe Morgan, and it is beautiful.
Awesome.
That's more recent for you. So if you yeah. could tell me, take me through, and of course he passed, so he's not with us, but take us through a little bit of, you know, the process of putting that one together.
Yeah, that one I like to find the things that make each athlete special and unique, and that one is more of a hero piece. It's kind of less conceptual. It's got George. It's got Joe as you're used to seeing him. You know, classic poses and stuff. But his famous stance with his chicken wing. I really wanted to accentuate that. Like he was obviously a great ball player, but like that was a cool little quirk that you can kind of, if you're working in a comic book motif, it's a little it's a fun element that made him special, made him unique than any other player kind of really did. And so if you were to think about it, like, I mean, maybe that was the source of his power, you know. Mm-hmm. Shazam has to say Shazam to turn into his thing, and maybe that's his version of Go Go Gadget.
There you go.
flapping his wing to get the power. So it's fun and to kind of think in those terms. And the little Joe one was particularly fond of that one too, because while these things aren't necessarily these aren't one for one, I'm trying to make it exactly like it was when it came out. I do like it when it could maybe feel and look authentic, and maybe trick some people that might see it on someone else's wall. Say, I didn't get that when I was a kid. When did that come out? And so that one really felt right. It felt like a comic book from the 70s, and it felt good. And when I completed it, it was like, yeah, that's exactly what it should be, is what it was. So I was really happy with that one.
When you talk about contrasting colors, you've got the blue at the top and it's the reds, but even there's like a shadow maybe over it. It's his home uniform here on the front, but it's almost like a shadow.
Yes.
The colors are just beautiful. And the idea of Little Joe, I heard you talking to Jamie about superheroes and comic books. Jamie Moyer, you spoke to earlier today. Little Joe, what's better for the smaller, I'm 5'9", right? I mean, who do we root for? Do we root for Steph Curry? Do we root for the 7-foot guy? Joe Morgan was only about, 5'8", and he won back-to-back MVPs while winning the World Series. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think of Altuve, right, for the Astros, Dustin Pedroia when he was with the Red Sox. The Reds have a guy named Matt McClain. He went to UCLA. He currently is actually out with having shoulder surgery, but he came up last year and just wowed everybody at 5'9", with power and quickness and all that. Talk about that a little bit. The kind of diametrically opposed, you wouldn't think of, Little being superhero-esque, but Joe Morgan was that, wasn't he?
True. And there's plenty of superheroes who are known for their size, that can kind of to the point we were talking about with Jamie Moyer, taking that which you, kind of the hand that you've been dealt, maybe you're not a power batter, taking what you are good at and maximizing that and kind of banking on that. And that's something that Jamie Moyer was really good. That's something was good at and Joe Morgan as well. And this whole project is really, it's very baseball positive, baseball elevating. And I don't really want to make a joke like, oh, Little Joe, I want to make him feel like he felt to us as kids. So granted, you and I probably didn't grow up with him.
He was on ESPN every Sunday night, though.
Yeah, in his heyday, in his prime. But even though you and I didn't, many did. And regardless of however tall he was a superhero to the kids watching him. And that's really what I want to create and put forth is I'm not creating guys how they were. I'm trying to create guys how they felt. And even Jim Wynn, Little Toy Cannon was the nickname, but he's on the cover. He doesn't look little on the cover. He's like he's batting and he's got these big kind of cannon wheels on and there's huge explosions, but no part of that feels.
It's only a kick. A jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Anything but large and superhero-like, and that's what I really aim for here is just elevating the players, the game. I love the game and I want it to look good. I want to make it look good.
Well, I think this is, as far as the Reds go of the ones you've done, I think this is the best one yet. I love the artwork. You're right. It captures a comic book feel maybe more than the other ones. I love them all, but this one I'm telling you, I really enjoy. All right. Before I let you go, if you will be so gracious as to allow me to do what folks on Facebook group seem to do quite often is give you ideas about possible pop prints of their favorite team in the future. The one I've suggested publicly and you may have seen before is the Nasty Boys.
Mm-hmm.
Charlton, Dibble, and Myers. The saying my grandfather, and I don't even know where he heard it. He said, Charlton Dibble and Myers, we put out the fires. All right. And there's an iconic poster you can find on Google of the three of them just looking totally nasty, right? And the funny thing is, when I've talked to players from that era, they say, and they were all crazy. You know, like I remember the stories. If you watch, it's on YouTube also, the 1990 Wire to Wire Reds video of like them winning the World Series. Like Randy Myers brought a grenade that had been deactivated, but he brought a grenade in the clubhouse in spring training. He tased Lou Piniella. You know, the stuff that these guys did. And of course, Dibble, if you watch him, he threw and hit Tim Tuffle in the back one time, and the ball looked like it just stuck in Tim Tuffle's back for like what felt like forever, right? It was literally probably half a second or less, but it was like, my goodness, he could have killed that guy. Wow. So the Nasty Boys was the one. The other one, and if you want to wait till he retires officially, that'd be fine. But Joey Votto.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in line already for the Joey Votto print. You know, I don't know if you saw when he came on Intentional Talk on MLB The Network one time wearing the Canadian Surge outfit, the kind of the Mountie uniform, and he talked about his horse named Nibbles and things like that. He was amazing. Or he taunted Phillies and Cubs fans, you know, by not giving them balls. He'd act like he'd throw it, and then he'd not and stuff like that. He was the ultimate villain at times, but he was hilarious at other times. The 1869 Red Stockings, the first professional team, Harry Wright with the big handlebar mustache. Certainly he was their best player. Adam Dunn, the guy hit home runs, and we always said he was country strong. Like he was already 6'6" and just a big lumbering guy when he got there. And a couple managers, Sparky Anderson, Lou Piniella. Certainly if you did another Big Red Machine angle, Sparky was known as Captain Hook. He would come and get pitchers out well before his time. Like he would do that. And then of course Lou brought the World Series home in 90. Of course Frank Robinson got traded to the Orioles when they said he was an old 30.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes on to win MVP and Triple Crown in Baltimore after being so great for the Reds.
Sounds like the Damian Lawyer story.
yeah, it does. Paul O'Neill kicking the ball from the outfield. He played for the Reds initially. He's from Columbus, Ohio, so local boy makes good around here. His baseball reference page actually lists him: throws left, bats left, kicks left. Because he had that one time when the ball got in front of him, and all he could do is kick it into the first baseman to save a run. And then Barry Larkin, you know, in our era, Barry Larkin was the consummate pro, played for the same team his whole career and went on to Cooperstown as well. So those are just some Reds ideas that maybe you could think about. And
I love it. And I'm going to say, growing up, Chris Sabo, like,
oh yeah, Spuds McKenzie. Absolutely.
He was one of the dudes. Just,
oh like, yeah. 1988, rookie of the year, made the all-star team, and was on the World Series team in 90. Hit it. I think he actually led the Reds in home runs in 1990. And was very key. If Jose Rio didn't win the MVP of the World Series, Sabo probably could have. Yeah, that's huge too. His daughter's actually on the pregame show here for the Reds, so that's pretty neat.
Yeah,
just amazing stuff. Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, yeah, I am dying to do a Nasty Boys in particular.
Oh, that's so nice.
But I want to. It's such a difficult thing. So many moving parts to pop fly, and it's just my wife and I. There's no team.
Yes.
It's just my wife and I. And so it's like all the moving parts to get three athletes on board at the same time.
Right.
It's, everything else is rough, but I'm holding out. I want to get all three guys on there. I would love to do like a triple autograph. That would be so much fun.
I have reached out to Charlton through, he does fishing and hunting charter services down in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I've not heard back from him. I've tried to reach out to Rob Dibble, and I haven't even efforted to find Randy Myers. I don't know where he might be, on a different planet for all I know at this point. But I've tried to get them maybe to come on my show as well. So you're right. That's a lot of moving parts. And if you do something like that, you'd like to have maybe the collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly like the Reds Hall of Fame, the Reds are known to have, and I say this, I'm a Reds fan, but you hear, and I've been to all but six of the major league cities or teams, stadiums over the years. And the Reds Team Hall of Fame is really nice and well curated. And I would venture to say, if you got a hold of one of the people there at the Reds Hall of Fame, they probably could connect you with who you're looking for there on the Nasty Boys. They were so iconic, and it was such an amazing year. All right, well, go ahead and share with my viewers and listeners how they can get into the Pop Fly community.
Sure. Well, every week on popflypopshop.com, we do a new release. New releases drop every Sunday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. On the site, you can sign up for the newsletter and SMSs, so you'll get reminders every week as to what's there, when it's going to retire. And the best kept secret on the internet is the Pop Fly collecting community on Facebook. And so it's a private group. You're going to have to dig for it, but lovely collection of some of the most fantastic folks I've run across on the internet. And the internet's not known for having fantastic folks. So that's I'm very, very glad and honored to have such fine folks in the Pop Fly collecting community.
And if you would, you're doing an event for the second time, I believe, out at the Field of Dreams.
I am. Yeah. Last year we did our first Pop Fly event, Pop Fly at the Field of Dreams. For two days, we went to the iconic movie site in Dyersville, Iowa. And it was our first time doing any sort of event. So I guess we started big. Yeah. And it was a blast and absolutely unforgettable time. And this year we're doing the same thing, going out to Iowa this August. And this time we're partnering with Dale Murphy, you know, speaking of TBS, but partnering with Dale Murphy and the Pop Fly Pop Shop at the Field of Dreams. And so here's your chance to play catch with the former MLB player. And I think there's one, possibly two tickets left, but okay. Again, it's on popflypopshop.com, but it's just about sold out.
That's going to be a great event, and congratulations mm-hmm. on all your success. And thank you actually for providing us, especially in that kind of darker time of 2020 and 2021. You brought me down some rabbit holes that I had forgotten about kind of, and really reignited. I've always been a huge Reds fan and baseball fan, but you really bring a lot of the history of the game back. And I was a huge reader as a kid, read all the biographies and things mm-hmm. like that. So thank you so much for coming on, and I really appreciate all your time.
Thank you so much. And just to respond to that real quick, I enjoy this too. I don't come to this project as a baseball expert. I'm learning too as I go. Yeah. So these athletes that I feature, I'm researching all week long too. I'm fascinated by these stories that I'm hearing sometimes for the first time. Like I didn't know Ted Kluszewski before I had done this project. Yeah. And I'm just finding these fascinating stories and narratives and realizing that baseball is full of heroes and villains and good guys and bad guys and underdogs and overthrows. And baseball really is just a long 100, 200 year soap opera with a revolving cast of characters. And it's just so fun to look at it that way and tell these stories that I'm enjoying just as much as anyone else out there that might be learning about these guys for the first time or learning together.
Well, the three name guy, I really appreciate you coming on, and I'm going to cut to the outro here, but thanks so much. And maybe we can chat off air for just a second.